for me, ultimately, what it's all about is wellness. Mm-hmm. I want to be healthy, mm-hmm. right? When I have children, it kind of changes my perspective on life. There were times in my life where I didn't expect it to make it past like 21 years old.
Yeah.
So now I'm 34 and I have three beautiful daughters.
Yeah.
And I want to stack the odds in my favor that I'm going to be around for as long as I can for them.
Yeah.
Like, I'm logical enough to know that there's a possibility I could step off a curb and get hit by a bus. But like, I'm also logical enough to know that if I stack the odds in my favor, then that's the best I can do for them and me. Yeah.
Welcome to the Eat Green, Make Green podcast. I'm your host, Pat McCauley. This podcast is all about celebrating the lives of those who have adopted a plant-based or vegan lifestyle and how it has positively impacted their health, relationships, outlook on life, and so much more. For more episodes and information about the benefits of living a plant-based or vegan lifestyle, visit eatgreenmakegreen.com. This week's episode is sponsored by Plant Fit Summit 2017. So when I was over in Singapore a few months back, I met an amazing dude named Luke Tan, a CrossFit athlete over there, just a total beast. He was a previous guest on the podcast. I interviewed him when I was over there, episode number 9, if you want to go check it out. But at the time he told me about this summit he was planning that he called Plant Fit Summit, and he was putting it together and traveling all over the place and tracking down top doctors, top nutritionists, top athletes all over the world that live plant-based lifestyles. And there's a total of 33 guests that he interviews, and they're just all incredible, experts in their field and very influential people for U.S. citizens, names you'll recognize like Dr. Neil Bernard and Rip Esselstyn, the founder of Engine 2, all kinds of people. All kinds of different stories, whether it's somebody overcoming heart disease, diabetes, or cancer through plant-based living, or somebody who lost 300 pounds with a plant-based diet, all kinds of amazing stories. There's even one story that stood out. There's a lady interviewed on the summit that she was given a few months to live after a cancer diagnosis, changed her way of living, and now she's in her 60s, and she literally just ran 366 marathons in 366 days. So just incredible stories, and literally the summit answers every possible question you can have about health and wellness. It covers all aspects from what should you be eating, what should you be doing for exercise, mental wellness, just every area. Luke just did an incredible job kind of covering all the bases with it. It starts on September 1st. It goes through September 10th. I just highly recommend it if you're looking for information on kind of what to do to live your best life and make sure you're around for the ones you love and all that good stuff. The link to sign up is bit.ly/EGMGSummit. That's bit.ly/EGMGSUMMIT. I'll also leave the link in the show notes on my website, and I highly recommend you check it out. One more thing before I give the intro. I'm riding in the PAM Mass Challenge this year. It's a 200-mile bike ride across the state of Massachusetts in support of Dana-Farber, which is cancer research and cancer treatment. In particular, I'm riding for all the children out there that have been diagnosed with cancer or are living with or fighting cancer. I'm trying to raise $10,000 in support of Dana-Farber. The link to donate to my personal donation page is pmc.org/pm0329. I'll also leave that link in the show notes. Every bit helps, and I appreciate the support. All right, on this week's episode, I sit down with a longtime South Shore native named Tom Fleck. Tom was very kind and gracious to let me come over to his house and do this interview literally a day before him and his family were packing up and moving to Miami. So we did the podcast literally among like a bunch of boxes and things like that in kind of like an empty house. It was pretty cool. But we talk about Tom's life growing up as an overweight kid and how that affected him throughout the rest of his life. How Tom found himself addicted to drugs and alcohol at a very young age. His lifelong battle with weight and health issues and kind of the fluctuations of being way overweight to, you know, kind of a normal weight and then back up to a very high weight. And just kind of that typical yo-yo type dieting sort of scenario. And how he's come out the other side as this, you know, fit, plant-eating, you know, Ironman endurance athlete and proud father and husband. So this is just an incredible story, a very inspirational story, emotional. It's moving. I mean, this guy's life journey is pretty wild. I really just instantly hit it off with Tom. He's just an awesome guy. And I really look forward to getting to know him in the future. And I hope you guys enjoy this one. It's awesome. So without further ado, the one and only Tom Fleck. All right, I'm here with Tom Fleck. We are in Hingham, kind of on the border of Hull. And Tom, thanks for... So to paint the picture here for everybody, Tom's in the process of moving down to Miami. He was gracious enough to invite me into the chaos of him trying to move out. You move on Monday, right?
The move has come tomorrow. Today is Sunday. The move has come tomorrow morning.
Yeah. So it's just, I appreciate that you squeezed this in for me. And
I'm happy that you're here. I'm super excited. Yeah.
So for me and the listeners, can we kind of take it back and get some background on you and kind of where you grew up, how you grew up?
How long do we have? 1 hour.
We got time. We got time. Let's hit it all. Yeah.
So my story is an interesting one, I feel. As it relates to food and just life in general, I grew up in Hull, Mass. I'll start at the beginning. I grew up in Hull, Mass, and I grew up in a normal home, I always say. Family of four children. I was the second of four children. And growing up, my mother worked nights as a nurse, and my father always did his best to take care of us. They did the best with what they had, and in the end, as a kid, that was keeping us alive and keeping us going, right? Getting us to school and just being responsible parents. I always think of it that in terms of food, we'll jump right into how it relates to food and the background of my relationship to it. It always comes that they were just in that survival mode. And being a parent now, I have three young daughters. I can see how it can be so easy to just keep the kids going in survival mode. Not knowing, you don't know what you don't know in life. I always say that, right?
Yeah.
So unless you know the facts about what you're feeding your children, then it's easy to just give them crap. So yeah. At a very young age, I was overweight. Mm-hmm. I, as a kid, I was always the chubby kid. I was always that fat little kid.
Yeah.
I've been over 300 pounds in my life.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. And again, for people listening, like you're super fit.
I'm 195
dude.
Right now.
195.
6 foot 195.
And we'll get into all the kind of athletic stuff you're doing now. But
trying to do, sure.
Keep going.
So as it relates to when I grew up, it was all about just being a kid and growing up. And I had a very normal life. I went to public school in Hull. I played a lot of sports growing up. I played football. I was a really good football player. And I attribute that probably mostly to my size. But I also have some athleticism in my bones.
So you played on that windy ass field.
Yeah. At the end of nowhere. The Hull
at
guy.
At the end of Hull, yeah.
Yeah, Hull Pirates. Big shout out.
Yeah.
But it was awesome. Like being a kid in Hull, like we had a lot of fun. You know, we did what we did. And for me, my story is so it's very, the food has always been a big issue in my life. Because growing up as a little kid, I was always that chubby kid, fat little kid, right?
Yeah.
So emotionally, that takes a toll. You get into fourth grade, and I can see it now with my children because my children are in that age where they still have that innocence to them. They don't care what people think of them, right? They don't care about boys and me liking girls and girls liking boys. So up until the age of that happening in my life, I was good. I was smart. I was into academics. I was always very smart, very athletic. So then in fifth or sixth grade, when the commingling with the opposite sex starts to happen, this is when my insecurities in about myself really kick into high gear. And it's because I was overweight. Like, I hung around with all these kids that were just normal kids, and the boy-girl parties started to happen, and I wasn't invited to them. And, like, as a kid, that would break my heart, you know?
Yeah.
Just sad. And so for me, there's definitely an emotional aspect to my relationship to food.
Yeah.
And I always, being that kid in fifth or sixth grade, I remember saying to myself, like, someday this is all going to change. Like, I had to do something to get back to that spot where I was, like, happy about myself and happy with who I was. So then in seventh or eighth grade, somewhere in and about there, I found alcohol and drugs.
Mm-hmm.
And I ran with that. And that's a big part of my life story, too. I've been sober for 14 years through the Fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous. And when I was 21 years old. So I'll get to that. So I went to high school and I just did everything I could. I found alcohol and I found drugs. And it did what it was supposed to do. It made me not feel all those feelings of insecurity, of doubt, of fear, of not being able to love myself, right? And that's what it was for me. And I ran with it. At first, it was fun, and it worked, and it did what it was supposed to do. And then as time went on and the disease progresses, the fun turns into not fun.
Yeah.
It turns into problems. So I had managed to keep my life pretty well in order on the outside. I graduated in the class 2000 from Hull High. And I was accepted into five or six different pretty good colleges. And I decided to go to Bentley College up in Waltham, Mass. To study accounting. And I was hanging around with some pretty... They were very loyal people. And that's the thing about Hull. People are very loyal. People, the friends you grew up with, I had 78 kids in my graduating class.
Yeah.
So of those 78 kids, our friends, we'd been friends since third grade.
Right.
Fourth grade.
Right.
So there's a certain loyalty that you have with kids like that, right? You become preteens to pre-adults with them. So I went off to college, and my mind was that I'm going to go to college and get my bachelor's in accounting, and I'm going to have like this good life. And it was craziness. Like, I was big into some serious drugs. The only drugs that I never did in my life were crack and heroin.
Yeah.
But other than that, like, we experimented with everything.
Yeah.
Right. And it got to the point in my life where I was knowingly taking lethal combinations of drugs, indifferent to the outcome, because I didn't care.
Yeah,
you get to a certain point where you're just so sad and your psyche is just so broken that you don't care if you're going to die, right?
Yeah.
You throw combinations in yourself, and it's a sad, sad place to be.
Yeah.
So what happened to me is what we call in the program, I don't know if it's the spiritual awakening. I was a senior in Bentley College. I was getting ready to go back to my senior year, and my disease of alcoholism had progressed up until this point. And that particular summer was a pretty wild one.
And so, are you still overweight at the time?
Oh, yeah. I mean, so this is all part of the relationship with food.
Sure.
That it, throughout the entire time, when I graduated high school, I was 310 pounds.
Yeah.
And then as different drugs came into the scene, cocaine and different uppers that allow you to go for 3 days without eating a single morsel of food.
Yeah.
By the time, like, my weight would fluctuate. I would go from 300, I would go down to 250 freshman year of college, because you're in college and you're in this brand new social scene and you're trying to do your thing. And it was the same thing. Like, through partying, I was able to make, like, good friends immediately with, like, the cool kids at Bentley College, like the football team and different people, and run with the crowd that I wanted to run with. And it was just through that aspect of my life. And so I was still fluctuating. By the time I was into my junior year of college, I was down to probably like 225.
Yeah.
But it was not through nutrition.
Yeah,
it was
right.
From
it was not a healthy 225.
Yeah, it was not a healthy 225. Yeah. It was craziness. And I was going into my senior year of college. It was the last weekend before going back for my senior year. And I still had this vision in my mind, or illusion, that I was going to go back to college. And I had survived 3 years. My GPA had gone from like a 3.3 starting my freshman year, steadily down, thinking that I was going to, and I was just trying to hold on through that last year so I could get my degree and get a job. And that was the fairy tale that I told myself, is that I was going to graduate college and everything was going to be better. The drug problems would go away. Like, as soon as I graduated college and got that job, like, I'd instantly be that grown up, responsible person that I've always wanted to be, that could have a family and buy a house and just be like a normal person, right?
Yeah.
That's all most people want in life, is just to have a shot at normalcy and like have a shot to be a responsible adult.
Mm-hmm.
And So at the end of that summer, it was a particularly wild few weeks to the end, and I was kind of in a tough spot. And I remember I said to myself, okay, I'm going to go back to college. I'm going to get away from all these people that and of course, at the time, like in my mind, it was the people that I was around that was the problem.
Yeah.
Right. The reality was it was me that was the problem. It was always me that was the problem. So in my mind at that time, I said, I'm going to get away and I'm going to be better and everything's going to get better. So I went back to school. I went back to Waltham in September of 2003. And for the first couple weekends of that school year, all my friends from Hull would come up to Waltham and it was the same shenanigans.
Yeah, yeah.
They'd come on Thursday night and I'd say bye to them Sunday morning without ever sleeping awake.
Yeah.
And it's a sad, sad way to be. So I remember after them leaving the second weekend, sitting on my couch in my dorm room and thinking to myself, like, I have to stop. Like, this is it.
Yeah.
And it was a spiritual awakening. It really was. I could cry if I really wanted to get into it because I'm moved. It was just this moment where I said, I have to do something about my life. I have to change. And sorry, this is not all food related, but it's part of my story,
fantastic.
Right?
Fantastic, yeah. No, this
so
is what it's about.
I was sitting on my couch and I remember calling my mom, and my parents were always awesome, right? They were very loving. I came from a good household, like I said, and I called her. And meanwhile, bear in mind that she was X amount of dollars into a higher education for her son who couldn't care less about it.
He cared
about everything else in the world about it.
Yep.
And she was supportive. I called her and I told her, I said, I can't be at college right now. I have to sort my life out. I have to get away and I have to go do something. And she's like, all right, well, what do you want to do? And I said, I want to come home. And of course, any good 19-year-old boy that comes from suburban America, like when you're in deep, what do? You want to go home to mom's house, right?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So that's what I did. I went back to Hull. She came the next day and I withdrew from Bentley College and I went to my first meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous on a Thursday night and I've been sober since that day, September 19th, 2003.
Wow.
And I don't say it as any kind of attribute to myself because my best thinking, I know, I never forget that my best thinking got me to that point where I was ingesting lethal combinations of drugs indifferent to the outcome.
Yeah.
Right? That's this, I tried and I tried and I tried in life and that's the best I could do.
Yeah.
So when I say that I've been sober since then, it's no great credit to me because I know like where my path gets me. It really is everything that I've learned in AA that has gotten me to where I am today. And I always say it to anybody that asks or wants to listen, that every single good thing that I have in my life is due to the fact that I'm sober.
Yeah.
Like the house, the wife, the kids, the job, the ability to want to take care of myself.
Mm.
Right? So even after I got sober, I still had always struggled with my nutrition and I was still fluctuating. In my course of my dietary experiments, I've tried everything you can imagine, right?
Yeah.
From not eating by doing drugs for 4 days and dropping 50 pounds to every fad diet, every weight loss pill they sell at CVS, everything you can imagine, right?
Yeah,
I've tried it all. And inevitably what happens is I always come back to that point where I would always have this place where you would always come back to those loopholes that you leave open in your mind. Like, I'm going to eat healthy 6 days a week, but on Sunday I'm going to eat two pizzas and half a bucket of ice cream.
Mentality,
And it's craziness.
And you still have that addiction to the food.
Of course.
With that mentality. You're just holding it off for 6 days and then still indulging on the seventh. Yeah.
Totally.
Yeah.
So one of the things that they teach you in AA is that there are underlying causes and conditions for why you drink, right? Mm. The drink and the drugs are a symptom, but you have to go back and really look at yourself and why you drank and used drugs. And when I did that through the help of the program and a sponsor and the 12 steps, I came to learn that it was all that fear, right? Right back from when I was a little kid, being a fat kid that was totally fearful of every way the world perceived me, of the way that I looked, of people would like me. It's all because of being a fat little kid that it all starts. And not being able to love myself because I didn't think that anybody else could love me the way I was.
Yeah.
Right? So for me, nutrition and the way it affects my life, it kind of is a lifelong story. And it's kind of like a spiritual thing. And
Did you end up getting a degree?
So I went back.
What's kind of the progression career-wise and stuff?
So I went back after 6 months. I withdrew the fall semester and I re-enrolled for the spring semester.
Yeah.
So I did the spring semester and then I did the following fall semester and then I had my degree. That was
so,
my fourth year.
So what was that like? You're going back sober. You're in the college setting still, right?
So I did not go back to the dorm setting. I commuted from Hull to Waltham to finish out the last year.
Gotcha. Yeah.
So it was good. So I graduated. I actually waited till the following May or June, whenever commencement ceremony was, to have that experience. I felt it was important for myself. And at this point, I was now sober and trying to do the right thing. And my parents, I wanted them to be able to have that experience. I was the first one to, in my immediate family, to walk across a stage at a commencement ceremony. So I went back and I graduated the following May. And then I went on one interview to State Street.
Yep.
And I hate it.
Yeah.
And I
that's where the entire South Shore works.
Yes. I had bleach blonde hair at the time. I was 21 years old. I had bleach blonde hair at the time. And I just was not into the corporate environment. It was not for me.
Yeah.
So I went on that interview. It went well enough. They were very nice. And I went back and said, I'm never going to do that again.
Yeah.
4 days after that, I drove. I got packed all my possessions in my mom's secondhand Volvo and drove to California. With no job. Me and my friend James. And we just wanted to go check it out and mix things up and try something new.
Yeah.
So we went out there. And we were out there. I was out there for a year. Just working, doing freelance working. And
where are we? LA or?
No, San Diego.
San Diego, all right.
So growing up in Hull, my extended family owns Dalian Wands and Movers, a big moving company in Hull.
Okay.
So my background as far as where I worked my entire life was always moving furniture.
Yeah.
So when I went out to California, I just got work where I could move in furniture and it was enough to pay the bills and hang out and check it all out.
Yeah.
So I was still young at that point, right? 21 or 22. And I was kind of just finding my way and doing my thing. And I was at that point, I was trying to eat healthy. Once I had gotten sober about 9 or 10 months into it, I was into one of my fad diets where I would not eat a lot and think that I just wanted to burn fat. And I would always be going to the gym and lifting weights and the bro science, like eating all kinds of like protein bars and drinking the energy drinks to get into pre-workout drinks and thinking
all
that,
the crap.
Thinking that that was the way that I was taking care of myself and thinking that I was doing the right thing.
Mm-hmm.
So I was actually in decent shape, I guess, at that point, comparatively to where I've been in my life. I was hovering around like 225 or somewhere in and around there. And I was relatively happy. I was sober. I was not 300 pounds and I was just living the life. So after San Diego, I came home, like always, came home, right? And I was working here and then...
Working for the family,
the moving company again.
Yep.
Yep. And probably 6 or 7 months after I had come home, I met Jess, who is now my wife.
And is she from around here originally?
She grew up in Quincy.
In Quincy, yeah.
Yeah, you just met her. And her mom actually... And it's so funny because her mom is an acupuncturist and she's big into Eastern medicine.
Yeah.
And like... To me, that was a different language. Yeah. And she like wanted...
It's voodoo stuff.
Yeah,
that's
exactly. Exactly.
That's hippie stuff.
Exactly.
Right?
Like to me, it was like, it was literally like speaking Chinese. Like I remember I was trying to quit smoking because I smoked a lot of cigars at that point. Yeah. Like when you get sober, a lot of the young people that are in the program, they smoke a lot, right?
So you gotta fill the void with something
course,
else.
Of course. Exactly. Yeah. So I remember early on, she wanted to give me and Jess acupuncture because Jess was also, as I met Jess in the program, I'll break her anonymity.
Yeah.
So she gave us both acupuncture, and to me, it was just, I went along for the ride, right, because I wanted to impress my then-girlfriend. I'm like, my mom wants to give us acupuncture, so all right, let's go. But to me, it meant, like, there was no meaning for it. Like, I just was along for the ride at that point. And so after we met her, we started dating, and we actually, early on in our relationship, went to Europe and backpacked Europe for 3 months. We didn't even know each other that well. We decided to go for it. We were like, it was a really make or break kind of trip.
Yeah.
We had been dating for like 2 months and we decided to go for a 3 month backpacking trip to Europe, which was awesome. Like it was the best, I guess, I don't know if I can say that still to this day, having gone through what I've gone through with my kids and everything else. But for a long time, I would always say that those are the best 3 months of my life.
Yeah. So what countries did you hit?
So we got a one-way plane ticket and we got a one-night hotel for the night that we landed. And we landed in Dusseldorf, Germany, and we had a 3-month train ticket. And we were just going to go wherever we wanted, wherever the road took us.
That's great.
Yeah, it was awesome. So we started in Germany. We went south through Germany, down into France. We went west across France, up to northwest France and the Normandy beaches. Then we went down the west coast of France, down into northeast Spain, into San Sebastian and Bilbao. And then we went down south through Spain, through Madrid, down to Barcelona, till we hit the Mediterranean. Then we went east across Spain and back into France, across the French Mediterranean, then over into Italy. Then we went south all the way through Italy, hitting all the cities, and then we eventually took a boat from the southern part of Italy to Greece.
Mm-hmm.
We spent a week in the Greek islands, which was amazing. Probably one of my favorite places on earth that I've
Greek
ever
islands?
Been. Greek islands? Greek islands, yeah, amazing. And then we went north, out of northeast Greece, through old western Russia, which was interesting. All the old communist countries of Bulgaria and Romania and all through there, which was interesting. Hungary, the Czech Republic, and then we eventually found our way back up into eastern Germany, where we, from Germany, we went west to Belgium and flew home.
That's a serious trip.
It was amazing. It really was. I could talk an hour just for about that trip. It was amazing. It totally was.
All right, so you come back.
So we came back, and we were in love. It was a make or break kind of trip, and it made us.
Yeah.
So after that, we rented a house in Hull and moved in together, and I was still, throughout the course of the trip, I think when I left, I was like probably 225 pounds, and we were just eating on the go and just eating crap and having no idea what it's funny because you don't know. Like, you don't know about, I didn't know about nutrition or like anything, and you just eat.
Yeah.
I had some kind of idea that I shouldn't eat like a savage.
Yeah, right.
But like, you don't really think about like the contents or like the nutrients of what you're consuming and how that affects your overall well-being at that point.
Yeah.
So that's all part of that roller coaster of my nutrition that would go up and down. I came back from that trip and we moved in together and I went back to work at the moving company and I actually started to work in the office at that point instead of out on the trucks. And at that moment when I did that, I continued to eat like I had for the past few years.
Yeah. Now you weren't moving.
And I wasn't moving.
Yeah.
And I went back up to probably like 275 pounds working in that office.
Yeah.
So that's another time when my weight went way up. And probably a year or so went by. I would say, I think we were there for 1 year and it was time to re-sign the lease, and the landlords, who were not nice people, didn't want us to come back, and we said ciao, and we bought this house at that point.
Yeah.
So that was 2008, and I just continued on. At a certain moment, the logistics of working in the office wasn't working out due to the different factors at play. Working from a family business is always difficult,
and sure,
the interpersonal relationships that come with it. So I ended up back on the trucks and I kind of made an effort to get myself back down to where I was before that.
Yeah.
And again, I had no idea
what I was doing. Yeah, well, I mean, what does the effort look like?
So honestly, when I try and think back on it, it's so funny because I can't even think of it. It was just eating less.
Yeah.
It was trying to... starvation.
Yeah.
Yeah, restriction. Restriction, exactly.
Yeah.
Where I would eat one or two eggs for breakfast, a cup of coffee, and then I would get to lunch and have one protein bar.
Yeah.
And then I would come to dinner and I would try and skip dinner because I was trying to...
Yeah, right.
Just like a very serious restriction diet. And it works. Like, if you starve yourself,
you're going to lose weight.
Yeah,
right.
And it did that for me.
Yeah.
And when Jess got pregnant with our first daughter, I was in that moment where my weight came back down. And my first daughter, it's funny because when I look through the different pictures of their childhoods when they're babies and when they were born, each picture of every different child, I look like a different person.
Yeah.
Because I was 275 at like before pre-pregnancy, and then like she'd have the baby, but I had been healthy for eight months. And it was craziness. It was insanity. It was nutritional insanity.
Like, yeah.
In the program, they have the saying, insanity, the definition of insanity is doing the same thing and expecting different results.
Yeah.
And that's what I was doing.
Yeah.
I was going up and down. So that same cycle repeated itself probably two or three times in those few years that my first daughter was born, and then my second daughter, 19 months later, 21 months later.
Yeah.
And it was just an up and down thing.
So where do you, I mean,
so eventually,
so you're going up and down for a while. When do you kind of get to a point where you start to kind of figure it out, get it under control, and when does that all happen?
What happened?
I'm assuming you got it.
Yeah.
I'm assuming you got it down.
So now I feel good. I feel like I'll get to that part, I guess, right?
Yeah, yeah.
So eventually what happened is I left that job at the moving company.
Yeah.
And it was a very fearful moment for me in my life because the company's been in my extended family for 100 years.
Mm-hmm.
And I had bought in this house working there. And if I had stayed there, I could have made a living being there and I could have supported my family. And there's a lot to be said for that.
Yeah.
But at the same time, I wasn't happy inside, right? There was, I knew that I wanted something more and the environment wasn't what I wanted for the long term.
Yeah.
So we had a client at the moving company who had hired this gentleman who was a designer from Belgium. And we became friendly. And I had said to him a few times, you should hire me, you should hire me. So after 2 or 3 years of talking to him and kind of negotiating what the best thing to do was, he eventually brought me on.
Yeah, and you're talking like an interior design type
So
guy.
His name's Koen Van Loo, and the company that we have is EA2. Big shout out, EA2.
Nice.
Right? And he's a really talented, super talented guy. His work has been in Architectural Digest.
Cool.
He's been, we have some really awesome clients.
Yeah.
Famous clients.
Nice.
It's a fun job. It still is. So when I met him, all of a sudden my world changed. It was being in this moving company to live my life in trucks and on the road and on the go, to now having a job where I was home Monday through Friday. It was like a more normal job. When I worked for the moving company, I also traveled a lot over the road.
So there's a lot more structure coming in now.
So it was more consistent.
Yeah.
But on top of that, also there was a consistency of the people that I were around, and the people were I guess it starts with the clients. When you're around those certain people, happiness these days, it seems to me, is people wanting to take care of themselves. I was talking to Brian over at Lido Juice, and he said, just yesterday I went in there, and he was telling me that a buddy of his from LA had just left, and they were rapping for an hour or so, and the guy from LA was saying that all these people that are out there that have all this money and having the most money is not like the in vogue thing to be. It's all about taking care of yourself. Like that's a trendy thing, right?
Yeah.
So now with this new job, we're at these clients' homes and they have kind of this influence on the environment that you sit in. You see people that are taking care of themselves, that are doing the right things. Like when they offer you lunch at their house, they don't offer to buy you pizza. They offer to like give you something that holds nutritional value.
Yeah, right.
So the seeds are starting to be planted of like, just changing the energy of the environment that I was in kind of made me want to change, right? You go from like wanting to eat a slice of cheese pizza and a roast beef sub at lunch to like seeing what these other people are doing.
Yeah.
So the seeds kind of start to be planted that, wow, like maybe there's a different way to do it.
Mm.
And I didn't do it immediately. I still like,
yeah,
I was still doing my thing and just doing what I wanted to do. And I don't know. Like for me, there's no like real moment where I'm like, all right, I'm going to start to eat healthy. I guess. So what happened is, I guess there is kind of a moment when I still really think about it. So we were working, one of the clients that we had was Tom Brady. We were at his house in Brookline that they just built a few years ago.
Nice, yeah.
So again, I was in this cycle of up and down fluctuation with my weight and having no idea of how to take care of myself. So I was on the upswing of one of those cycles thinking I'm going to take care of myself. So I was at the Quincy Y and I was trying to be fit. So I was over there doing a madman, doing an hour of cardio, lifting weights for an hour.
Yeah.
And like still.
It used to be my life.
Yeah. It's my craziness. Story, yeah.
Busting my ass.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Thinking like this is how people take care of themselves. Yeah. Right.
This is the only way.
This is the only way. So this was this was 3 years ago now. So we're getting into the more recent history of the life. So I decided. So I was over at the Quincy Y, and there was a group of us that would be there every morning when they opened at 5 a.m.
Yeah.
And we would do an hour on the stair machine. Mm-hmm. They had six brand new stair machines. The Quincy Y had just been renovated.
Yeah.
They had six brand new stair machines. We would go in there, and then like three or four of us every morning would go and just stand on that stair machine for an hour.
Yeah.
And just go up and down. And at the end, just be like a dripping sweat.
Yeah.
And like I thought that was – and it did work. Like it does
– Got you
elevate your heart rate for an hour. Like it works.
Yeah,
there is an element to it that – it does work, right? And when I'm always on that upswing of trying to take care of myself, I start to make different food choices too, right? It's the same philosophy of the restriction diet. Like I totally, it was more of a cheat day kind of thing. Well, for 6 days out of the week, I would eat well. And then on Sunday, I would eat whatever I want.
Yeah.
And that's how I did it again. So I was at the Quincy Y, and to mix it up a little from the stair machine one day, I said, oh, I'll try out a spin class.
Yeah.
So I went into the spin studio And I started to do that one day a week instead of getting on the stairs.
Yeah.
So then we were working in Brookline at Tom's house, and I saw somewhere, billboard or somewhere, that he was involved with the Best Buddies bike ride.
Yeah.
So I said to myself, oh, I'm going to sign up for it. It'll be a good opportunity to... We got to be pretty friendly with Tom. So he, I knew that he would take care of us, and it would kind of be a fun experience to have that inside connection.
Yeah.
And, so I started to... I bought my first road bike at that point, and I had never done a competitive athletic event other than high school football in the time I quit JV basketball.
So did you do the 100?
So I signed up for the 100-mile run, right? That's my mentality.
Yeah.
I go big.
Yeah,
go
nothing all or nothing.
Yeah, yeah. So I signed up for the 100-mile bike ride. I bought a road bike, and I would do the spin class, and I trained for it, and I did it. And I had a blast doing it. I rode the 100 miles.
Yeah.
So that was kind of my first introduction to any kind of training for any kind of athletic event. And that was 3 years ago. So that same summer, that's early in the summer. It's in June. So that same summer in July, there's a local triathlon over in Cohasset.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
The Cohasset Tri.
A little sprint tri.
Sprint tri. Yeah. So I said, oh, I just rode my bike 100 miles. I should try this triathlon and see what it's all about. And meanwhile, I had never done a race in my entire life. I had done the bike event, but that was not a race. It was just like a chill thing where you just go at your own pace and there's the aid stations and you just do your thing, right?
Yeah.
So I said to myself, well, I just rode my bike. Like, I really liked it. I still had that kind of athletic drive, that competitive nature that you have as an athlete growing up, that like you want to see what you can do and compete. So I signed up for the Cohasset Tri.
Mm-hmm.
And that morning I was all geared up. I didn't do any running. I didn't train at all to run.
Yeah.
I didn't train at all to swim.
You just showed up.
I just showed up.
Yeah.
And the day before, it was a huge storm. So the day before, they canceled the swim. And then the morning of, it was a crazy rainstorm.
Yeah.
Right? It was pouring rain.
So it turned into a bike run.
So then the morning of, they canceled the bike. So it turned into just a 5K road race.
Yeah.
They had everybody just say, okay, after an hour of waiting there, not knowing what was going to happen,
the
organizers just said, okay, it's going to be a 5K. Everybody's going to go on the gun. Boom.
Yeah.
And everybody just ran the 5K and was happy to go home because it was freezing cold and raining.
Yeah.
So that was my first organized road race that I had ever run. It was a 5K, having never trained or run in my life.
Yeah.
So I had a blast. And it was at that moment that I said, wow, I want to see what this is about and and keep going.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I don't conceptually say that to myself, but like, I knew that I wanted to do it again.
Yeah.
Somewhere inside of me, I knew that I wanted to race, right?
Right. Something clicked.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I signed up for another sprint triathlon down in Duxbury. It was the Duxbury Marshfield Beach Triathlon.
Okay. Yeah.
So that was my first experience swimming in the water. Like, again,
so did you train for this one?
No. It was the same philosophy that I said to myself. I grew up in Howell. I swam at the beach all the time. We used to swim in the bay. Like, I know how to swim. Like, how hard can it be, right?
Yeah. Now, are you doing like I think if I were to do... The one thing that's holding me back from a try is the swim.
Yeah.
Like,
it's been the biggest thing for me to overcome.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Are you going in here? Are you doing like the breaststroke, or are you you do know how to like swim?
No, I have no experience with any kind of
form
on how to like. I know how to doggy paddle. I know how to like dive off a diving
board. Yeah, right.
At this point, I know how to dive off a diving board and not drown.
Exactly.
Like, that's what I have going for me.
Exactly.
Right.
All right. So show up.
So I show up in like even the gear. Right. All these people show up and they have like the real wetsuit and the tri bike,
the fancy
everything.
Stuff.
So I'm on my road bike and I have a wetsuit from a buddy of mine that used to be a surfer that's all like torn up and ratty, and they announced that morning that it wasn't wetsuit mandatory because the water was at a certain temperature.
Mm-hmm.
So I said, oh, I'm not going to wear a wetsuit. Why would I do that? Like, I can get out of the water and get on my bike faster.
Yeah.
Which was not a smart move because I was just ignorant at that point.
Yeah.
I didn't know what I didn't know. So I went in the water. I went off with my age group, jumped in the water.
So what do we get, a mile? Half mile?
No, I think it's like 500 yards.
500 yards. All right, cool.
Which is not like a huge distance. Like,
how long does that...
So
20 minutes?
It depends.
Yeah.
That day for me, it took like 24 minutes. If I did it now, I could do 500 yards in less than 10 minutes.
Yeah. Yeah.
Happen to have to swim some, right? So I had no idea.
24 is not bad. No, I mean, that sounds pretty good to me.
So I had no idea what I was doing. I got out and I started to swim and I thought I was going to die. I thought that like, this is crazy. Like instantly out of breath and gas, like thought I was going to die. And then I got off. And at this point I was still hovering around. Like, I was in decent shape. Like, with all my fluctuation and my restriction diet and not knowing about nutrition, the best that I would ever do would be down to 225.
Yeah.
I thought that if I was down at 225, that I was in shape and fit and I was good.
Yeah.
Because I came from a place where I was overweight. Right.
Right. Right.
So I thought at that point that I had really had it going on.
Yeah.
And so I was like 225, which in the triathlon world, you're in the Clydesdale category, which is like 215 pounds or above.
Yep.
So I had the terrible swim. I got out. I got on my bike, did the ride. I'm a pretty decent cyclist.
Yep.
And then I ran and I did okay on the run, which okay for me is like, at that point, it was like 9 minute miles, like 9.5.
Yeah.
So I finished my first sprint triathlon, and in the Clydesdale age group, because it's such a small field and small event, I was like second overall. I won a medal. I was like, all right, this is awesome.
Yeah.
Right? So again, it fed into that feeling like, oh, I want to do this again.
Yeah.
And that's kind of how the athletic career started.
And do you like eventually like start training, you know?
Yeah.
Or
yes,
do you just keep scheduling them and showing up?
No. At that point, I decided that I need to learn how to swim. Yeah. Like, somewhere in there, I said I need to learn how to swim.
Yeah. So you get to a point where you start to take it a little more seriously.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Just cool. Because there's something about it that it's not just the events themselves that is attractive to me. It's the discipline that it takes to have to train to prepare for an event.
Yeah.
There's something about that discipline that you need to have for yourself.
Right.
That speaks to me.
Right. And it's like when you show up, the work's done.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. And I could apply it also to nutrition. Mm. There's a certain level of discipline that you need to really eat well and take care of yourself.
Yeah.
Right. The people that have no discipline to me are the people that kind of have some understanding of the facts, but it's too difficult for them for one reason or another to adhere to what they know is right for themselves.
Yeah.
Which you see a lot in the world, right? And you see it more, not more often than not, but you do see it.
Yeah, absolutely.
So what happened is I eventually hired a swim coach and she taught me how to do a proper freestyle.
Yeah.
Swim.
And you doing that at the Y?
Quincy no, Y, this was actually through, I was riding at a studio through the winter, a bike studio down at Whitman, Cycle Life Studios, and they had coaching. Triathlon coaching.
Yeah.
And there was a girl there, Bethany, and she was a former swimmer. She's a good swimmer.
Yeah.
So she had classes where she had like a group of three or four of us where once every, for 6 or 7 months. So that summer ended, right? And then that following fall is when I kind of wanted to see what I could do.
Yeah.
I kind of got the bug and I said to myself, wow, I'm going to see what I can do with this. So that fall I hired her, and every Thursday all the way through the winter we would meet over at the Weymouth Club and we would swim every Thursday.
Nice.
And we started off with like the most basic shit you could think of, like just floating in the pool and like learning how to properly balance your body just in the water.
Yeah.
Yeah. She taught me a lot.
Yeah. That's great.
Yeah.
That's great.
So then the following season I did the Best Buddies Ride again.
Yep.
And I signed up for a handful of triathlons, and I built up and trained for a Olympic distance triathlon, which is longer. It's
They
vary in distance, but it's like...
is it like 70? 70.3?
No. That's the one between the sprint and the 70.3.
Okay.
So normally it's like a 1,500-yard swim, which is just under a mile.
Yep.
And then a 25 or 26-mile bike ride.
Yep.
And then a 10K run.
Yep.
So I did a handful of those, and I did well. Like by the end of the season, I had actually won my age group. It was at a race up in Maine. In Old Orchard Beach, a Rev 3 race, and I won my age group. And of course, like with these local small races, it all depends on who's there that day. Like,
yeah.
I'm not blistering fast, like
by
any means, but it was fun, like to go out there and win an age group and stand on the podium and like take that first place medal.
Yeah.
So it's fun to do, you know?
Yeah.
So that's kind of, and at that point, my nutrition was still all out of whack. Like when you train that way, you are always hungry.
Yeah. And it kind of, it allows you to get away with not eating
so
great.
It covers up for a lot of stuff, right?
Yeah.
So I still kind of had this mentality of restriction and reward.
Yeah. So this is like 2 years ago now?
Yeah. So now we're getting into like the near...
Yeah.
Yeah, 2 years ago. I guess this was last summer. Not this summer, but last summer.
Yep.
Right? So I still had this mentality where I would work out. I knew I was going to burn through calories at a high level. I would eat foods that I thought were pretty decent for me. But then on Sunday, it would be all bets are off and just eat whatever you want.
Yeah.
Craziness, right?
So you're still going cheat day.
Yeah, totally. And for me, it was always that the loophole mentality that you have those reservations in your mind that you're not ready to give up one thing or the other just because you're not ready.
Yeah.
And it's funny, after you start to want to learn about different things, like you start to learn the reasons for that, right? So eventually what happens is I keep racing, I keep seeing results of training, and I think to myself that I really want to take it. I want to see what I can do. And the only way that you can really see what you can do and your true potential is to eat proper nutrition while
training. Fuel yourself, right? Yeah.
Because it's a huge part of it. It's a huge part of athletic performance. I mean, there are people that go out there and can eat like crap and have natural talent.
But I always argue, though, they just don't know how good they could be still. Possibly. Yeah, like, they might be the best in the world.
Yeah.
But there's still a level that they can get that's higher than, you know.
So, like, the elite athletes in the world, the nutrition is dialed in, right? They have nutritionists and they work with people to tell them what to eat. And so I agree with that statement.
Right? Yeah, yeah.
So eventually, to talk about the vegan lifestyle and bring it back to the whole reason for us being here together. So the way that I was introduced to it is I somehow or another found Finding Ultra, which is Rich Roll's book.
Yep.
And it was about endurance athletics. He mentioned that he's a recovering alcoholic. He was into endurance athletics.
Yeah.
But the veganism part of it, to me, was not what attracted me to want to... I listened to the audiobook while...
It was you relating to his story.
Correct.
Yeah.
And it, not the already existing relations.
Yeah.
So the veganism was the only one that I didn't relate to at the time that I listened to the book.
Mm.
So I ended up listening to the book over the course of different long bike rides that I was doing down in Miami. I'd go out for like a 3 or 4 hour bike ride and just plug in the headphones and listen to the book for a few hours. And in the course of listening to the book, like, I was moved by it, right?
Yeah.
Like, he talks about in the book when he, the relationship with his father, and like, it brings me to tears. At that moment while I was listening to it for the first time, it moved me, right? Yeah. It moved me to tears. And he really emphasized how important nutrition was in his training for endurance athletics.
Mm-hmm.
So that inspired me to want to see what it could do. And since the day that I finished his book, which was back in, I think, late February, early March, like, I've been totally plant-based.
Yeah.
And it's, for me, in anything in life, it's always about results. Like, I listened to your podcast the other day and kind of how you backed into it. And you kind of experimented with it and you felt better.
Yeah.
Right? So I started and I said, I'm going to see what happens. I'm going to go plant-based and see what happens, not knowing anything about it.
Mm-hmm.
And immediately, I could tell that I felt better. I could immediately see that I could recover faster from a workout.
Yeah.
It is, like...
That's been huge for me.
Inflammation, without dairy, like, and the different animal products in my life, like, it's amazing. Like, I can go, like, this morning I went out for a 10-mile run.
Yeah.
And then I've been
here. You can go again.
Like, I've been here working at my house all day packing boxes. And, like, it's a level, steady energy. There's no...
Yeah.
So seeing those results... It has made me a believer. It has made me think that there's no reason not to do it.
Yeah.
Right? So then on top of that, you start to kind of get into the different aspects of it, right? You start to watch the documentaries. You listen to more and more podcasts.
Yeah.
You do all these different things to kind of expand your knowledge horizon.
Mm-hmm.
And what you start to learn, like, really starts to blow your mind.
Yeah.
It really does.
Yeah. And how like... So many people are so blind to it.
Blind. It's crazy to me. It's so crazy.
And I think it takes, personally, like, you getting to a place where, I don't know if it's not looking at kind of like animals as food or what it is, but it's getting to a place personally that you're kind of in good health and open to like a different way of thinking.
Yeah.
So I think the health, getting yourself right, and then kind of all the other stuff you start to see clearer, you know?
I agree. So, like I said, it blows me away, like, some of the different facts you start to hear and, like, the different things. And I've been listening to your podcast here in the last few days, which you do a great podcast. Good
thank
work.
You. No, thanks. This is going to be a good one.
And thank you. It's just, I just tell the truth. That's all.
Yeah, I love it. This is great.
But so you talk about how there are three different things, right? There's the health part, the animal lover part, and there's the environmental part.
Yeah.
So for me, it all started out just wellness, right?
Yeah.
On top of also, so it weaves through all the different fabrics of your life, right? Yeah. Like, I have 3 children now, and I think back to myself as a young kid and my parents not knowing what they didn't know.
Yeah.
And it's crazy, too, that Western culture has been able to completely blind people to what is acceptable for people to eat.
Yep.
Right? All the different huge corporations that produce all the food can fill a grocery store full of stuff that people buy and consume without ever thinking that this is harmful to me.
Yeah.
Right? They have no idea.
Yeah.
So even for like the first years of my children's life, I just give them, like, you have some idea, like, you want them to be well, but yeah. you don't really think, like, oh, they shouldn't be eating this or that.
Yeah.
Right?
So it's you like Fruit Loops are yeah. all right occasionally, yeah, yeah. you know what I mean? It's, yeah, you're not thinking
for ice cream, no problem.
Yeah, make sure, that, Sundays, make sure they're getting strong with all their milk, yeah, you know what I mean?
Of course.
Yeah.
Even to this, like, just recently, so my wife, who has been nursing our youngest daughter, we just found out my youngest daughter has a dairy allergy. So when I first started, my wife kind of rolls her eyes at me because I always have been one to, as I said, go on these nutritional fads,
yeah.
right?
Yeah.
So I say, oh, I'm going to go vegan. She rolls her eyes like, okay.
Yeah.
Talk to me in a month when you're ordering a pizza.
Yeah. Right?
So it turns out that right around the time that I started, she also found out that our youngest daughter, Zelda, has a dairy allergy.
Yeah.
So through my energy, and I was preparing all my foods and animal-free yeah. foods, and she started to eat it, and she's like, oh, I kind of have to do this too.
Yeah.
So she's actually been plant-based too now for yeah. a few months, and she is also training for her first marathon
nice. In October. Yeah. That's awesome. So yeah. how, just for people thinking about, you know, making a change or listening to this, like, how hard was that transition?
So it's not hard.
Yeah.
If you care about yourself and you have enough energy to want to take care of yourself, it's not hard. Like,
right.
I didn't have to go clean out my entire kitchen. And like, for me, I've always kind of just done my own thing anyway. Like, I'm not big into, when I go on my fad, I don't make this grand announcement and say, this is going to happen. I could just kind of go to the grocery store. I buy what I need that I'm going to need for the next few days.
Yeah.
And I eat it and I consume it, you know? Mm-hmm. You don't have to go out and do anything crazy. The one thing I did do is I bought the Vitamix blender.
You did, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
And I love it. I love it. Like, it's worth its weight in gold. Like, they're expensive, but I use the thing twice a day, every day.
Yeah.
I love it.
And they, I still use, like, a Black & Decker.
Yeah.
And I'll, like, I have a few buddies that have Vitamixes, and every time I go over, like, I like, bring my smoothie ingredients because it's, like, it's such a treat. It's such a treat.
You put the ingredients in there, and it's amazing.
And you can make so much other stuff with it, too, you know? Yep. Yeah, me and my girlfriend I live with, Courtney, we've been messing around with nice cream.
Yeah.
You know, doing like freezing bananas and freezing mango.
Coconut milk in the blender.
It's amazing. Blend it up and you're...
So that's the other thing too, is that I can't get over, is you can make the most delicious meals.
Yeah.
And you don't have to give up anything in life.
Yeah.
Like, you can consume delicious meals
at
every meal.
Yeah, without
having animal products
right.
in it.
There's this huge notion that it's this restrictive diet.
Yeah.
Like, you see, like, the posts on Facebook of, like, you know, like, what vegans eat, and it's like an ice cube.
Yeah.
Or it's a head of, like, iceberg lettuce or something. Yeah. You know what I mean? And there's the jokes, and there's that notion that it's restrictive, but it's just opening yourself up to all this other stuff to eat. Like, the actual category of meat and dairy is pretty small compared to the thousands of grains and vegetables and fruits that, you know, we just, most Americans and most of the world go their entire life without ever eating, without ever venturing out of the meat and dairy, you know, kind of broccoli, maybe occasionally sort of thing, you know?
Corporate America, I feel like, has done a good job to train us how to fill our plate with their foods.
Yeah.
Totally.
Yeah. So what has it done? I mean, what has it done for you, health-wise and
so what
elsewhere?
It's done for me is it's closed those loopholes, right? It's closed all the loopholes. For me, there are no loopholes anymore.
Yeah.
When you can't have any of those foods. So another thing that I find interesting, having done a little bit more research, and it's not even research, right? I watched a documentary on Netflix and
call
it research.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
Like, you learn facts. And
yeah, you're learning.
Yeah. But how they've done different studies that show that there's different chemical properties in dairy and, like, similar to sugar that are addictive.
Yeah. Have you read The Cheese Trap by Bernard?
No.
So Neil Bernard, he just came out with the book this year. It's called The Cheese Trap. And he talks all about that.
How it's addictive.
Like, the actual dopamine release and everything. It's addictive. Yeah.
And to me, being a recovering alcoholic, like, that speaks to me because...
Yeah.
That's what alcohol and drugs do, right? They release that same dopamine. They make you not feel your feelings, right?
Yeah.
They make you...
And you read Roll's book there when he talks about giving up. I think in the book he talks about giving up cheese, but he explains it as like trying to get off heroin.
Yeah, yeah. When he detoxes, yeah. Like they would, the body will literally detox.
Yeah,
yeah,
yeah.
And I like, it's funny because now when I see my daughter, they come in the kitchen looking for a cheese stick, and they have like this crazed way about them. And you'll offer them anything else, and they're like, "No, I want cheese. I want cheese." Yeah. And they'll cry to the point like, "No, I want a cheese stick."
Yeah, it's crazy.
But it is crazy to me that it's that. You sound like a conspiracy theorist when you really start to like spout off about it. About how these corporations
people think you're crazy. If people don't relate, think you're crazy.
But like, it's crazy to me. What's crazier to me is that people don't think for themselves and want to make a good decision for the wellness of themselves and their family.
Yeah.
That they would rather call people conspiracy theorists because they tell them the cheese is addictive than maybe stop to think about it and be like, wow, maybe it is. Maybe it's not good for you.
Right. Right.
So that's. You asked me what it has done for me. Like, I feel that it's a marathon. It's not a sprint, right? It's not about being vegan and plant-based and expecting, like, the world's going to turn upside down.
Yeah, right. It's
athletic
like,
performance. I'm going to be, like, a professional athlete or anything else. Like,
it's, yeah.
For me, ultimately, what it's all about is wellness. I want to be healthy, right? When I have children, it kind of changes my perspective on life. There were times in my life where I didn't expect it to make it past like 21 years old.
Yeah.
So now I'm 34 and I have three beautiful daughters.
Yeah.
And I want to stack the odds in my favor that I'm going to be around for as long as I can for them.
Yeah.
Like, I'm logical enough to know that this is a possibility. I could step off a curb and get hit by a bus. But like, I'm also logical enough to know that if I stack the odds in my favor, then that's the best I can do for them and me.
Yeah.
You know? So.
Yeah. So. Anything in terms of what was big for me was when I finally drew the line in the sand and said, you know, meat and dairy and a bunch of processed crap is just something I don't eat. When I was finally able to say I don't, you know, I was like free. Yeah. I was free from kind of that food addiction cycle.
Sure.
Of the cheat day cycle, of the kind of having that battle with myself, you know, when you're at a social event or you're, you know, at the restaurant having that battle of, I know I shouldn't take one more. I know I shouldn't order that. But, you know, almost always you give in because there really is an addiction. So when I was finally able to just say, it's not something I do, I was just free. Everything became so much easier. And as a result, you know, you can't eat bad when you're eating whole plant foods. And then, you know, your tastes, another thing people don't believe, your tastes start to change. You know, you start to crave the foods that you are eating.
I was out for my run this morning and all I could think about was to get home to make my green drink and how delicious it would be. Yeah. And like, if you had told me that I would ever have that thought in my life at any point previous to up until 6 months ago, I would have called you the craziest person you've ever seen in your life.
Yeah.
But it's so true. Like, you crave those things.
Yeah.
It's so true.
So, weight-wise?
So, right now, I'm at 195.
195,
And I know, like, and part of me wants to be like, it's a hard balance because ultimately, I still know that I have a few pounds to lose that I want to still get down to, like, 180.
Yeah.
But I have to reject the urge to want to do it my old way.
Yeah, right? Absolutely.
Restriction. Yeah. I know that if I continue to do what I do,
Consistently? Yeah.
Then I'll be okay. Like, ultimately, for me, the weight loss is a side effect because it's just about taking care of myself.
Yeah.
That I know that if I eat plant-based, that I'm going to be fine no matter what I do.
Absolutely.
Like, if I eat... So it happens. Like, I'll go out for a 5 or 6 hour bike ride and then I run for an hour after that on a long Saturday training day. And for the rest of the day, you can't eat enough food to fill the hunger of the calories you've burned, right?
Yeah.
So when you're on a plant-based diet... It's you can't replace it. Like, you'll go to bed hungry after eating all day.
Yeah.
So that was one of the loopholes that was closed for me because I would go and do a long training day and you would order a large calzone from Crow Point and sit on your couch and you'd feel like crap for the next two days, right?
Yeah.
I would wake up the next day and my hands would be swollen, my face and eyes would be swollen.
Oh, yeah.
It's not a healthy way to live.
Yeah.
So.
Nice. So. Yeah. What is, so being a parent in America, right? You know, are your kids in school? Some of them in school? Yeah.
So my oldest daughter is going into first grade. My middle daughter is in preschool.
So how do you, so I had one other guy on the podcast who had young kids, you know, and eats plant-based and everything. I mean, what's the approach when it comes to kids? Because you can only control so much. You can, obviously, you want what's best for them, and you know what you know now, that you don't want them eating a bunch of meat, dairy, and processed foods and all this crap. But at the same time, like, they're over friends' house. I mean, how do you approach it?
So
how do you approach it?
It's challenging, right?
Yeah,
it's challenging. But ultimately, I'm kind of new in the game myself, right? I've only been plant-based for 5 months, six months. So I'm not a crafty veteran that has all the tricks down. So it's a learning process for me just to be a parent to someone that's in that environment.
Yeah.
And for me, it is, I guess, leading by example. I don't tell my kids they can't have anything, right?
Yeah,
if they want to eat something, I'm not going to be the guy that's going to say you can't have it.
Like, yeah.
Ultimately, there are probably times that I should give them a little bit more discipline.
Mm.
But I also know that unless I have some sort of plan or alternative or solution, then it's hard for me to do that.
Yep.
And it does at the time make me a little bit sad that, like, they'll go off and, like, for example, my daughter went to a birthday party yesterday and I don't know what they served, but it was summertime and it's just standard American stuff, right? Pizza and hot dogs and birthday cake and, like, I can't say to her, like, don't eat that. So for me, what I ultimately want to do is lead by example.
Yeah.
Right? That's kind of my lifestyle anyway. In the program of AA, it's the same thing. It's attraction. It's not promotion.
Mm.
Because I think that the best way for me to communicate the message and carry the message is through my own actions.
Mm.
If people see me, my family, or like my immediate family, my kids and my wife, or my extended family, like my siblings or mother and father or cousins or uncles, whoever it may be, friends, anyone.
Yeah.
If they see that I've taken on this lifestyle and they see that I'm healthy and they see that I'm happy and they see that it's a manageable thing.
Absolutely.
And they say, wow, like, what are you doing? I had one friend over last week and he kind of is in that same place. Like, we've all been, like, going to the gym, eating 200 grams of protein a day, like doing all kinds of crazy stuff. And he said, like, oh, what are you doing? And I said, this is what I'm into. Like, we went to the fruit center and we made dinner. He has a young daughter and they were all playing.
Yeah.
So we went down and I went down there and we got all the ingredients for tacos and tortillas without any kind of dairy in it. And we had a blast, you know?
Yeah.
And he's like, so just recently he's like, oh wow. He's like, I think I'm going to go plant-based. And he's been struggling with a long time with digestive issues.
Yeah.
And he's like, just getting into it.
That goes away so fast.
He's like, yeah. He's like, when I eat plant based, I have no problems.
Absolutely. Yeah.
He's on medicine, all medications for it, everything.
Mm.
So, like you, I've had asthma my entire life.
Yeah.
My entire life, from as long as I can remember being a kid, have a rescue inhaler.
Absolutely.
Everything,
right? I had the nebulizer before
as a kid.
Yeah.
Sure. And, like, that goes away. Like, I still have a rescue inhaler, but I think it's more psychological than anything.
Yeah.
Just because I've used it for 25 years.
Yeah.
That, like, as soon as you start to feel any kind of, like normal symptom.
Yeah.
That you want to, like, reach for it. But, like, it's reduced by probably 80% usage.
Yeah.
And it just goes away. And it's all based.
It's just lung inflammation, right?
I believe it's all from the inflammation from the animal products.
Yeah, absolutely.
So when I see my kids go out and do that and, like, I'm terrified having my life experience that I have of having that fear as a little child of being judged because I was overweight.
Yeah.
That they're going to end up in that same boat.
Yeah.
Right? Like, different hereditary things. Like, my family is all big boned. Like, we're all, like, big people.
Yeah.
My father had a hip replaced a couple years ago. So after they did the operation, the doctor came into the room and was telling my dad. So I don't know if you're familiar with how they replace a hip. They take the biggest bone in your body is that thigh bone. I don't know the medical term for it.
Yeah, I don't either.
It's the biggest one in the body, right?
Yeah.
So they literally take it and saw off the top, and then they screw a ball back into the top.
Uh-huh.
So he came in and said to my dad, he's like, you have the biggest femur, maybe it is? You have the biggest femur bone that I've ever seen, right? So, like, we all have these big bones. Like, I weigh 195 right now, and I tell people that I want to still lose, like, 15 pounds and they're like, no, don't. You're like, you'll look sick because they think that it will be too much. Like, I walk into a place and I see someone that I haven't seen for a few years and they'll be like, are you all right? Like, are you sick?
Yeah.
And I'm like, no, I'm healthy. I've never felt better.
Yeah.
But it's because I've lost the weight.
It's different. You look different. Like, you don't look unhealthy to me whatsoever.
I feel
right?
healthy. Yeah. Like, I feel healthy. Yeah, totally.
Yeah.
So with the kids, it's a challenge. For me, I'm just going to lead by example. I feel like that if I make my dinner and my wife's dinner every night, and we offer it to them, but that we can still offer them a normal kid's dinner, that eventually they'll want to emulate what we're doing. And they'll be able to make their own decisions. And I feel that the only thing that you can really do is inform them enough to be smart enough for themselves to want to make their own decisions.
Right, it's like, you know, dad doesn't eat this because, you know, and just,
so that's my game plan with them.
Cool.
So another thing also that I think is the, like, I love that people like you are out in the world. Because when I say my style is attraction, not promotion, I feel that the world needs people that carry that torch of promotion. Because I feel that it's done so much for me in my life in the past, short past that it's been, that I can just see such a difference and I can see the trajectory of where it's going to take me. That people should hear it. And it's not only just for the health reasons, right? Like, we haven't talked about anything other than the health reasons. So when you start talking about the environment...
That's episode two with
us. When you start talking about environment and the other one...
The animals.
Then it's a whole nother thing, right?
Yeah.
It's amazing. Like, you could go on and on for hours about how people are so desensitized to what they do. Like, there's these little tidbits that you watch in the movies that stick with you. And I forget which one it was. One of the documentaries it was. Maybe Cowspiracy. And one of the people they're interviewing says, you cannot be an environmentalist. You cannot be an environmentalist.
And eat meat and dairy.
Eat any animals.
Yeah.
It's impossible. Like, you cannot say that you're for the environment and eat animals.
Yeah, it's hilarious. Like, one particular person I am friends with on Facebook recently posted about, they like put a bunch of solar panels on their roof, you know, and they posted like how much like energy they saved. And it was like the equivalent of like
two cheeseburgers, you know,
not eating two cheeseburgers. And there's just a huge disconnect. They don't see it in people that are, you know, anal about recycling and all this stuff and changing out to energy efficient bulbs. And they can't see that what they're eating is doing 1,000 times more damage to the planet, you know? But anyway, that's a whole other conversation.
I know. So when I think about that, and combined with wanting to be well for myself and my family, like, I would be crazy to do any... I feel like that once you arm yourself with a certain amount of knowledge, that you can't go back. You can't. I couldn't consciously, like, go back to my lifestyle and, like, think that it's all going to be okay.
You look at it a whole different way now. So to somebody, this is a question I always ask, and you have an incredible story. To somebody maybe in your situation 10, 20 years ago, somebody that is kind of in these fluctuations with their health and diet and can't seem to figure it out, whatever they try, or struggling with addiction of some kind, that's looking to kind of make a change, listen to this, and get their kind of life headed in the right direction. What's the first step that they can take?
Admitting that there's a problem.
Mm.
Step one. That's an easy question. The 12 steps hold all the answers, right? You can't want to get better until you admit to yourself that there is, in fact, a problem.
Yeah.
Because once you admit that, then it's the logical next thing to do is want to take action.
Mm.
Right, and as soon as you're taking that action, you're moving in the right direction.
Yeah.
So for me, and that's a lot of the like what I think of the people that you want to influence. Like, there's all these close people to you, to me, that I love, that I would love for them to want to take care of themselves.
Yeah.
But they have to make that first, and it's not even just with
setting the example and let them make.
It's not even just with the plant based, even addiction. I have people in my life that battle addiction, right? And you have to wait for the moment that they decide that there's a problem. That they can admit to themselves that there's a problem. Because until that happens, nothing will change. In my opinion. Maybe that's closed-minded, because some things can change maybe here and there. But I think that for anyone that's out there that wants to better their lives, like, the first thing is truly admitting to yourself that there's a problem with the way that your life is now. And then once you have that energy behind it, you'll take the necessary actions. And for me, it's always a slow learning process, right? Like, I listened to Rich Roll's book, and I started to listen to his podcast. And as you listen to his podcast, he has guests from all different cross sections of life. And each one kind of makes you think, like, you always relate it back. I always relate it back to myself, like, wow, like, and then you start to think, and like, you move on to like, listen to that person's podcast, and they'll talk about something new. And it's a slow education process, right? That's one thing that I have always tried to be, is teachable and open minded.
Cool. So So what's next for you, man? So you're obviously so tomorrow down to Miami. You know, you're training, you get some races on the horizon. Yeah. What's next for you?
So I just did a half Ironman, which was in Mont-Tremblant, Canada, and it was awesome. All plant-based, plant-powered athlete.
Love it, dude.
It was awesome, yeah.
Nice.
So I also have signed up for a full Ironman in October, and I plan to do the whole thing plant-based.
Nice. Where's that one at?
Louisville.
Louisville, nice. Yeah.
So there's something about endurance athletics that I really love.
I'm just drawn to. Yeah.
So that's my next race. That's in October, and I'm terrified because when I was doing the half Ironman, I was getting to the end of the bike course and thinking I would hate to go out and ride 56 more miles.
Yeah.
And then I was coming into the finish line after running 13.1, and I was thinking to myself, I can't imagine going out to run another 13.1 right now. Right. Yeah. So there's still some work to do on that aspect, but we're moving down to Miami, and that's a big change for the family, right? We're in Hingham, Mass, which for the listeners is kind of a posh little secure safe spot just south of Boston, and it's a beautiful town. The people are really nice, but there's a certain level of security and homogenous.
Yeah, a little bit of a bubble.
And there's pros and cons, because now we're going to go from that to having our kids in the Hingham public school system to metropolitan Miami.
Yeah,
it's like that's a shift, it's a big change, and there's a lot of fears that surround that, and there was a lot of doubts, and there's a lot of different things that affect how you do going into that, right? All of our families are here, and we're going to move our kids away, and there's parts of me that are sad.
Yeah.
Sad that my kids aren't going to have as much time as they normally would with different family members, but ultimately, I think that you have to balance it all out and try and decide what's best for the happiness and wellness of your family.
Yeah.
So we're going to go down to Miami, which it turns out has an awesome plant-based food scene.
Yeah, it sure does.
There are
yeah.
so many options for plant-based, from full-on sit-down restaurants to just takeout places to food trucks that are strictly plant-based.
Yeah.
So I'm excited for that aspect
of it. Yeah, man. Pretty soon. I'm working on it. Pretty soon in Boston, we're going
to
have that.
I hope that you do, because I would love to have options when I come back.
Yeah,
I would love to. That's one thing about being plant-based that I will say has probably been the most challenging.
Yeah.
Is that social, like the normal American way is every now and again, you want to just go out to eat, right? You want to go sit down, or you want to
go
out
to get out of the house.
You want to go with your wife, you want to go with your friends and sit down and eat. And depending on where you go, there sometimes are not great options.
Yeah.
Right? Like you can only eat the house salad so many times when you're just like, whatever. Like, why did I even come here?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
So it has been a little bit challenging, but you just deal with it, right? There are ways to deal with anything. If you have the right energy behind your mindset, like, you can deal with anything. You
totally.
Can make it anything a positive experience.
So where can people, I mean, I know you got an Instagram. Where can people kind of follow you, check you out, get in touch maybe?
So I would say that Instagram is the best.
Yeah.
FlizNation, FlizNation.
Cool. Yeah. FlizNation.
I post some stuff up there. I'm not big into promotion, like I say, but I kind of post my own life, and check me out.
Yeah, absolutely.
I'd be happy to talk to anybody that is struggling with anything or wants some guidance in the right direction or just wants to say hello. I'm always happy to talk to someone now.
So I got one more for you.
Okay.
So my brand is called Eat Green, Make Green. I believe and I know that eating this way, living this lifestyle, eating green puts me in the best position to succeed at whatever it is in my life that I'm striving for. And kind of whatever my goals are at a particular time, that's how I define the make green portion of that. So why do you now live plant-based? You know, why do you live this lifestyle?
So I guess the number one thing for me is the commitment to my family and to want to be around with them and for them as long as I can be. Because I feel like that of all the different things that I do in my life, like having the kids and having, like, those kids have brought love into my life and filled me with love to a level that I didn't know was possible until I experienced it, right? Mm. Like, I get emotional just talking about that, too, about how there's a certain level. And I know that that'll change, right? I have three girls. So talk to me now when they're 4 and 6 and talk to me again. And
when they're 13.
And then I'll be telling them to get lost. But ultimately, it's all for the family, and it's all for just wanting to have let everyone have the best shot in life that they can to realize their full potential. I feel like through realizing my own full potential, it'll enable them to realize theirs, and that's what I'm in it for. Which, again, it's a long game. It's a long con.
It's a marathon.
Yeah,
it's a sprint. It's an endurance event.
Yeah, in the end, it's an endurance event.
Yeah, that's awesome, man.
One day at a time.
Yeah. Well, thank you, man. You're a total inspiration.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, this has been awesome. Thanks.
If you're ever in Miami, look me up.
I will. All right. Thanks, man.
Thank you.
We did it.
Awesome.
For those that are interested in adopting a plant-based lifestyle, you're in luck. That's what I do. I work with men and women all over the world to adopt this lifestyle, to heal inflammation, to get off their medications and treat their health at the source, which is with diet and lifestyle. My program called 7 Weeks for the Rest of Your Life is designed to teach you exactly how to transition into a healthier lifestyle. And I give you all the tools, all the resources, everything you need to adopt this lifestyle and apply it to your life for years to come. For more information on my course, pop over to eatgreenmakegreen.com/coaching. I'll see you guys on the next episode. Have a great week.